Welcome to the Fayetteville Fire Podcast, where we talk about all things fire-related, safety tips, and things that are happening in our can-do city. I'm Don Cheetah, Captain Community Risk Reduction, and I'll be your host for the podcast. In the overnight hours of January 3rd, 2024, four children tragically lost their lives in a St. Paul, Minnesota house fire. St. Paul fire officials say that the house did have working smoke detectors. We're going to talk more about this later in our safety message of the month. So today we're going to talk about fire life safety education, community risk reduction. I'd like to welcome my guests today, firefighters Tawanda Upshaw and Jeff Tenner. Welcome. How are you doing?
Pretty good, and you?
Good, good.
Doing good.
Good, good. Tawanda and Jeff, you're the two fire life safety educators for the City of Fayetteville Fire Department. What does that mean?
To me, being a fire life and safety educator is helping our communities stay ahead of risks that may be happening in each community, whether it's falls for our elderly community. We want to teach them about risk falls, keeping things discluttered, smoke alarms and things like that. Just staying ahead of the calls and helping our community be safer within their homes and their environment.
To me, it signifies a role dedicated to educating and empowering communities on essential practices and knowledge that can save lives in emergencies.
Right on, in a nutshell. So how long have, Tawanda, how long have you been a fire life safety educator?
I'm new, so about 8 months.
About 8 months, and Jeff?
About a year almost.
Just coming up on a year, huh?
Here in April, yep.
And not to take anything away from both of you, but you're both newer firefighters too. I think, Jeff, you're 2.5 years.
Yep.
And Tawanda, you're just over a year now. So being new to the fire service and then being in a position to put out a message about fire safety and fire education, is that a challenge?
Not really. That's not really a challenge. I'm still new to this, so it's a lot of information that I still need to learn myself. But I have a good crew with me that teach me a lot of different information, so I'm learning just as well as the community.
Sometimes it's a challenge, sometimes it's not. Depends on the age group and the environment of people that you're talking to shift due to the fact that I do have some experience on riding a truck and being inside the community every day, so I know how to deal with the problems that come up that we have to educate them on. So we do have, sometimes we have a little bit of issue, but other than that, it's more of the people that we're talking to and getting them to understand what we're trying to teach them.
And I think that's a challenge when we're trying to get that fire safety message out. It's just not just the community we're talking to, but I think it also is a challenge when we're working with the folks in operations at times. You know, sometimes, and I was an operations guy for 26 years, your focus in operations is get on the truck, answer the call, and trying to get them to understand or play into that education piece of it to help reduce having to get on the truck and go to them calls.
Exactly.
So daily tasks. I mean, what's an average day or normal day? There is no normal in the fire service.
No.
But like Tawanda, what's a normal day for you as a life safety educator?
I come to the office, I check the emails, make sure the activity calendar is up to date with the city calendar, making sure the trucks know what activities or community watch meetings to go to. I make sure that they have up-to-date smoke alarms or CO alarms and have enough so they can take it out to the community. And whatever task my captain tasked me to do. And I also upload images or information to Facebook or social media page. So,
yeah, and social media, that's an animal all to itself,
yes.
Right? a great platform, though. Do you, 25 years ago, there was no Facebook or anything. So how does social media play into us getting our message out?
It depends on what messages we're trying to get out there, but I like to post like pictures or images, like fun images, so it could engage a lot of different age groups or communities. And also my captain and the higher-ups want like more videos so that people can be more engaged and actually learn what we're trying to put out there.
Right on.
So that can be a little difficult to try to figure out.
Right, right. What kind of videos and who's going to be in it?
Yes.
And you're not really a camera person, we found out.
I'm trying.
That's a good thing this is a radio show, right?
Yes. Exactly.
And Jeff, what are some of the assignments or tasks your normal day?
Just like, you know, we start out basically, you know, answering voicemails and emails. And then I go into, because I'm their car seat program coordinator, I go in and check my roster, make sure everyone is up to date. If anybody's coming up on recertification, I check that. I check to see if any stations do need new car seats, or just to make sure that all of our car seat techs are up to date and the new ones getting their training and things like that. And then whatever else my higher ups have for me to do that day, I go out and do.
Right on. And, you know, car seat, that's just one of the programs that we offer in Fayetteville. Talk a little bit about the car seat program.
So our car seat program is for anyone in the community who can't afford to purchase a new car seat or need help getting new car seats. We will have them. They can come to the station. We can check their car seats out, make sure they're installed properly. Their child is fitting in it properly. There's no recalls or their car seat is out of date or anything like that, just to make sure that your child is in the proper safety restraint that it needs while operating your vehicle.
And I think that's a very important thing for parents to understand is one, it isn't one car seat fit all.
No, not at all.
For the different size, height, weight, exactly, age of the child and what type of seat. And then you talk about expired seats. So a layman sits there and says, well, it's a car seat, it's plastic and got some cloth on it. What are you talking about expired? Can you explain that a little bit?
So a lot of car seat manufacturers only guarantee their car seats up to 10 years. So after that 10 years, they don't know, you know, the webbing could get weak, the buckles could get weak, things could get twisted. So that's why they only manufacture them and guarantee them up to 10 years. After that, they can't guarantee you what's going to happen to that car seat.
And you know, we're in Fayetteville, North Carolina. We're in the summertime. You're getting, you know, I say summertime, pretty much from March to October.
That's our summer.
You can have 90-degree days in these car seats sitting inside a closed vehicle that gets up above 100 degrees, the degradation over time, webbing getting weak, just the padding degrading enough where the child don't properly sit in there are all keys to that, right? We kind of want to explain more when you say you can't afford. So we do provide car seats in certain situations.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. If a parent does not have a car seat at all and they happen to pull up to our station, their child is not in a car seat, we will give them a car seat. If they come and their car seat is expired, there's a recall on it, we will not allow a parent to leave a station without their child in a proper car seat.
Yeah, and that's very important. And we're not encouraging, please don't just start driving the fire station with an unrestrained child just to get a free car seat, because you're putting their lives in great danger to do that. You know, like any other city entity, we have a limited budget, but we do provide because we want to make sure that all the children are properly restrained at all times. And Tawana, we'll go back to the smoke alarms a little bit, and you kind of oversee the smoke alarms and smoke alarm program. Talk a little bit about what our smoke alarm program is.
Providing and installing alarms in homes to ensure residents have adequate fire detection. So we get calls every day or emails stating that, you know, a lot of the elderly people doesn't have smoke alarms in their home, or they don't have working smoke alarms in their home, or their alarm is beeping, but they can't get up there to reach to change the battery. So I schedule fire trucks or myself or our crew to go out there and make sure that their fire alarm, they have working fire alarms, or we go out there and give them working fire alarms and or CO alarms. Outside.
And that's important for citizens. Know that, you know, what is it? 4 out of 10, 40% of home fire fatalities occur in homes that did not have a working smoke alarm.
Yes.
So. Mm-hmm. One of the big things we want to make sure is you don't lay your head down at night without a working smoke alarm. So,
and even if you hear a little beeping or if you don't know what's going on with your smoke alarm or carbon monoxide alarm, give us a call so we can come out there and check it for you.
Yes.
To make sure everything is working properly.
Absolutely. Challenges day-to-day. We talked a little bit about challenge. What are some of the challenges day-to-day that you run across?
My main challenge would be scheduling events like fire trucks going to the schools or smoke alarm checks and are with our activity calendar, because a lot of, like the first quarter, second quarter, we have different fire department training sessions. So I have to make sure that what I'm scheduling is not conflicting with the fire department training sessions as well. So it's a lot to look at different programs and look at different paperwork to make sure that I'm not, you know, over scheduling the departments.
Yeah, and so those out there to understand, it's not like somebody just calls us and says, hey, I want a fire truck, and we just say, yep, you're getting one. But there's a lot of levels that we got to go through, make sure we're not double scheduling, make sure they don't have EMS Con Ed, make sure there's not multi-company evolutions.
Yes, yeah.
And all that to get the properly scheduling. And if I remember right, I was looking at the statistics of the last quarter, October, November, or the third quarter, I'm sorry, July, August, September.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we scheduled right around 100-ish, maybe a little bit more events.
Yeah.
And then October alone, I think we had an excess of 150 events just in that 1 month.
Mm-hmm.
So, and how is that received? I mean, working with the operations crew and stuff to do that, how does that go?
I mean, working with them, some of them are quick to do it, and some of them are like, hey, that's your job, you know, this is what we signed up for, which I completely understand, you know, but we also, when they do say that, we do explain to them the reason why we want you all to come is because this is your, you know, this is your community, this is your district. We want them to see your face because you're going to interact with them a lot more than we are. And that's how we make our crews and everyone understand that, hey, part of your job is CRR as well as community risk reduction, because you are inside the community more and they see your face more than we will, because we're Monday through Friday. So if they need you on a weekend, we don't come, you guys come. So that's why we get them to realize. And once they do that and they get there, they love it. They have a good time and, you know, they enjoy doing it.
I think that's important to understand that, yeah. And it's also the eyeball effect of it's a lot prettier to look at that shiny fire truck with the guys in the gear.
Exactly.
Than us to pull up and just stand in front of a group and just talk all the time.
Exactly.
And you get that little bit more out of it. Are there other programs that we run through the fire life safety education, community risk reduction? Are there other, you know, we had smoke alarms. We talked about car seat. What other types of things do we provide for the folks?
Community CPR, or hands-only CPR, and training first aid.
Hands-only CPR is one of our big things that we do. We're trying to, if we can, get majority, if not all of our community in hands-only CPR to let them know that it's okay to do hands-only CPR. We do not provide certification. That's what the Red Cross does. But we give them a class that they need no training to teach other people due to the fact of how high and how many people go into cardiac arrest each year. So it's about 350,000 going to cardiac arrest, and 90% of those people do not make it due to the fact that only 40% of people receive witnessed people to interact and start that CPR. So hands-only CPR is one of the big things that we're trying to push to get our whole community underneath so we can lessen those risks of people going into cardiac arrest.
Yeah, because one of the programs that we started, I think a little over a year ago now, with the hands-only CPR is research has showed that just chest compressions alone on someone in a cardiac event, even without breaths and stuff, there's still plenty of oxygen
in their blood that
contained in the blood, that if we just get the chest compressions to keep that blood moving, keep blood fresh to the brain, it significantly increases the chance of survivability.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. And once again, that's another thing that people are calling our office all the time to schedule, right?
Yes.
So any other programs we could think about that we do? Any kind of community outreach?
We do a lot of public events, so we collaborate with different vendors and other people out in the community. So we come out and set up a table so we can talk about fire safety as well. So like we do the Dogwood Festival and a lot of different festivals that come up or out there.
Yeah, so you can come by any one of these festivals. We got a tent. We'll have some handouts and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about fire and life safety education. Well, it's kind of, I've always looked at it as one age group or one set of ages that we gear everything fire life safety to, and that's children.
Yes.
I mean, if you go to the NFPA website or go into these other websites where they provide materials or we purchase materials, it's coloring books and things. It's all towards the kids. In your opinion, is that an effective, I know, and it's been that way forever, but is that an effective way? Do you think we're getting the message out we really want to get by talking to 5 and 6 year olds?
It depends. I am shocked a lot of times when I do go to a lot of schools where 1 through 5 year olds, and we ask them questions about fire safety, and they know a lot of the information. So it's pretty amazing to see, you know, how much a 2-year-old know to call 911 or who to, you know, reach out to if they need help. So I feel like some of the messages is getting out there, but I also feel like we should engage with everybody and not just a certain age group.
And do you feel we sometimes miss that we get so focused on the elementary school or the children that we don't maybe have as great a plan or as great a message when we're at community events, festivals, or whatnot, of getting that message out to the adults?
Yeah, we try our best to, but because we focus on the kids so much, there are some age groups that we do miss. And like Tawanda said, I mean, you will be surprised of how many 5-year-olds will tell you about your job more than you expect them to. So, I mean, we do miss, I would say, like the older kids. And the reason probably is because teachers, schools don't believe that older kids really want a firefighter to come in. Yeah, they may not want us to come in and bring the big truck, but some of them may want to hear about the job and things that we do to help them, because they sometimes don't realize they could help their parents at home with just a little thing of little brother getting out of the kitchen, because, you know, most house fires start by unattended, like distracted cooking. You know, right. Mom has to go tend to the baby. Next thing you know, oh, there goes up in smoke. So,
right. And you know, looking at the reverse side, are we reaching the right demographic? I mean, we've had kids and they go to school. They always bring stuff home, right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe getting them coloring books. Hey, mom, dad, I got this coloring book. Can we work on it? And we try to get the message into the house that way.
Yep.
That makes sense. One of the other programs that I think is underutilized, we're trying to improve, is home safety surveys. Talk a little bit about home safety surveys.
So home safety surveys is you can go online and do them. Call us. We can come in and walk through with you. But we go in to see, you know, look at how you're laying your drop cords, if you're, you know, chaining them, if you don't have smoke detectors in the right area, if you have smoke detectors at all, if your carbon monoxide is placed in the right area. Just going through and looking at your home to see what things we could help you lower your risk of any kind of falls, trips, fires, anything like that would be hazardous in those type of situations.
And also having a fire escape plan, making sure everybody in your family know like where to go to if something do happen.
And that's huge, and that's going to be our safety message of the month is the fire escape plans. And we do have forms online that you can print off, and you can draw up your own escape plan with your kids and family members. And besides home safety survey, we do have a home safety self-checklist on our website. And residents may or may not know that they can print off this 2-page form, and it's just a checklist going down to check things in their house that they might not even think about as far as safety. A little bit of clarification on what Jeff said when we're talking about drop cords is extension cords. You know, extension cords and power strips.
Yes.
That get greatly overused in households. And people should know that, you know, a power strip should be plugged directly into a wall, not into another extension cord, and only have the items on there that fit. Don't put another power strip into a power strip into a power strip to plug a bunch of stuff. So let's hit on, you know, we've talked about fire life safety education, and it all ties back into what we talked a little bit earlier, community risk reduction, reducing the risk in the community. Do we feel that the phrase or the title community risk reduction it becomes more of a title in fire departments than what it is action?
At times, it's more of a title than an action because of a lot of people don't understand what that means. So they're like, oh, that's just your job. But actually, it's everyone within the fire department's job, because community risk reduction is actually seeing the risks and the hazards that are in your area that happen all the time. And your job is to help your community avoid making the same things and doing it over and over again. That's why part of community risk reduction, one of the models, is staying ahead of the call.
And I think that's a great point. I think we sometimes label like community risk reduction division or community risk reduction captain and think that's what community risk reduction is. But it's really, it's a department thing. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, of course.
And like you said, it's getting out into your communities, which, you know, who knows better their fire districts than the engines serving that district to identify and try to get ahead of them risks so we can reduce them. With community risk reduction, the five big E's that come along with that: enforcement, engineering, education, emergency response, economic incentive. Some of them things are outside of our realm, obviously. One of the big ones is education for us, but how does economics, how does that become a challenge?
The economic part of it becomes a challenge, because like you said earlier, we have a certain budget that we have to deal with, and we're also dealing with different economic statuses in our community. Some areas have a lower economic status than other areas, so we have to adjust to the area that we're in order for them to be able to have the proper and safety things that they need, because what they have sometimes is all they can afford and all they know. So we just have to show them a safer way to do that to be able to have what they have.
All right. Would you like to add anything onto that, Mr.
Wanda? No. He covered everything. Yeah.
Pretty much covered that, right? And that's a big part of, you know, we go into part of community risk reduction is our community risk assessment. And that's, you know, talk a little bit about that. We're assessing the demographics of the education levels, income, poverty, number of vehicles at a house, you know, and how does some of these challenges, we'll say a community that's, you know, a little bit more impoverished and most of the houses don't have vehicles. How do you get into a message in there, or how do you help these people? I mean, is it something just the fire department can do?
No, it could be a community based as well. So we can get information out there for people that come to events, and we can try to push information and give flyers, and, you know, hopefully they can see our Facebook page and see, you know, different messages on there as well, and just try to engage more and get our message out there.
And also working with other departments, whether it's fast transit, maybe we need to route some buses into an area to get these folks to the grocery store, or you know, opiates and drug crises, trying to work with counselors, and all that becomes a huge challenge, I think, especially working outside. We're so internal as a fire department, would you agree, that it's kind of tough to step outside and work with them other partners? And then, of course, other things, enforcement and engineering, that's going to be your code enforcement. A lot of people may not know, but we work closely with our code enforcement officials.
Yes.
They're in the same building as we are, and if we identify things on a code side, fire alarm activations and commercial structures, we work with them to kind of get them reduced and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So just a small thing of what we do, right? I appreciate both of you coming on and talking to me today. Is there any other message you'd like to get out there while we got the airtime?
Just that we also, we are a coalition with Safe Kids here in Cumberland County, which we also focus on bike safety, Operation Med Drop, as well as the whole county of Cumberland with our car seats and all that good stuff. So we have a lot of programs out there with that.
Right on. And Tawanda?
No.
Anything good?
I'm good.
I'd say go to our website, bravethefire.com, go under public education, and there's a lot of useful tools and information right there for our folks, right?
Oh, yes.
Well, I'd like to thank you both for joining me today.
Thank you.
All right. So back to our safety tip of the month. So we said that on January 3rd of 2024, four children tragically lost their lives to a structure fire that had working smoke alarms. The message is working smoke alarms in your house is great. We want everybody to have them, but it's not the only tool. We can't preach enough how important homescape plans are. Everybody in your house needs to know to get out of the house. Some of the tips we're going to offer this month: pull everyone in your household together, make a plan. If you got smaller children, it'd be great to draw a plan, as children a lot of times relate more to pictures than they do just verbal stimuli. No two ways out of every room to include doors and windows. We get in such a habit that we always know to go out a door and down the stairs. That might not be a viable escape route. They need to know how to go out a window or hang out a window, get out a window, get somebody's attention to get help. Make sure your escape routes are clear and doors and windows can be opened easily. If you recently painted, make sure that them windows are loose and they'll open and close easily. Sleep with the bedroom door closed. I know this is an uncomfortable thing for a lot of people, but just having your door closed is going to allow you them extra minutes it's going to take to escape a potential fire in your house. It's going to slow that spread and give you more time. If you have infants or adults with mobility issues, make sure someone's assigned to assist them. And if that person's going to be away from the house for an evening or whatever, make sure there's a backup. We want to get these folks assisted on getting out. If your windows and doors have security bars, make sure they have emergency release devices. This in no way diminishes the security of the bars on the outside, but a quick emergency release on the inside allows you to use that window or door to get out of the structure. Choose an outside meeting place, a safe distance in front of your home. We always say to have your meeting place in front of your home, like a mailbox, because that's where the first responders are going to pull up. And once you are out, stay out. Under no circumstances should you ever go back into a burning building. If someone's missing, you inform the 911 dispatcher, or when that first fire truck arrives, you notify the firefighters that somebody's missing. They have the equipment and the ability to get into a house and get somebody. I don't know how many times over the years you read about somebody going back into a house for a dog, a cat, or a child, and then they get quickly overcome themselves. So get out, stay out. Thanks for joining us on our Fayetteville podcast. Be sure to subscribe to Radio Fayetteville on your favorite streaming platform to listen to all our podcasts. The fire service is built on tradition, but does that tradition still exist today? Join us for our next podcast when we'll discuss, are the traditions lost? Until then, be safe.